We're with the superintendent of IPS, Dr. Eugene White. And is what Congressman Carson talked about real? The foreclosure problems which impacted IPS very hard, that takes a toll on your students.
Takes a tremendous toll on the students. I'm very, very happy to hear that they're going to bring this information to the community. But whenever you're displaced that way, it's a very traumatic experience. And you know, Amos, we have the most mobile student body of any school district in the state. Our mobility ratings is higher, which means our stability rating is the lowest. And there is something to having a stable environment for a child to get an appropriate education. So I hope that families can take advantage of this particular opportunity.
That's one of the things that you pointed out in your report, counter to the MindTrust report. You called yours Growing A-Plus Schools. And one of the things that you pointed out is that the MindTrust, my words, not yours, focus more on process instead of really understanding the realities of the IPS district. Not so much what goes on in the classroom, but the environment outside the classroom.
I am sure, based on what I've read in their report, they have no clue of the whole reality of the experience of our students. As a matter of fact, many of their proposals are just that. Their proposals, they're not based on success anywhere. Mm-hmm. Wishful thinking is a good thing, but my particular plan is based on progress and success. That means we know we can do these things. We're not hoping to do them. We're not throwing jello against a wall and hoping something sticks. We know what we can do. Many times, their particular efforts just completely disregards poverty, homelessness, and all those features.
Now, you're not using poverty and homelessness as an excuse
for why
IPS isn't at 90% achievement.
Amos, poverty is not an excuse. It's just a fact. Mm-hmm. But if you look at poverty, it's the number one variable for determining the performance of students. If you don't believe it, just look at your Hamilton Southeasterns and your Carmels. There's nothing magical about those students in those communities, except their stability rating is very high because the families are very stable. Their income level are mill to higher, and that's a tremendous advantage.
Pat Pritchett was the superintendent that taught me about mobility, because I think most people look at schools and assume that if a classroom has 30 kids in it in August,
right,
those same 30 kids are there in June when they let out for the summer.
In Carmel.
From the state's own report, they say that 2% of the million public school students in the state of Indiana change schools within their district in a year, that their intra-district mobility is 2%. Their inter-district, which go from one district to another, is only 3.9% of a million kids.
Right.
Out of your 33,000 and change from last school year, 14% of that number switch schools within IPS.
Intra, yes.
And then 16.8, almost 17%, that's one in six, switch schools between IPS and somebody else.
Right.
That's like 30%, if my public school math was any good.
And that's the reason last year we allowed them to do a report on the kindergarten students at school 61.
Mm-hmm.
So he found this kindergarten teacher who started out with 22 kids in the class, but over the period of the year, she educated more than 50-some kids in that classroom. And some of those kids left more than one or two times.
Mm-hmm.
And you have this in and out. Meanwhile, the teacher's still charged with teaching all of them, getting all of them prepared, getting all of them ready for first grade, all of them ready for the assessments that they have to get, and that's a challenging experience. And that's why we had the reporter to attempt to communicate the dynamics of this in-and-out situations on classroom teachers.
A couple things on your report, and maybe questions to ask, why wasn't something put in your recommendations? the Mine Trust has said you got all these administrators sitting down at the Ed Center two blocks mm-hmm. from our station, sitting around, you know, soaking up money, you know, administrating, not doing much of anything. You mm-hmm. say that a good number of those people, the Mine Trust says, are administrators, are really teachers. A couple questions. One, why do we need the big building down the street? Not that I don't like you as a neighbor here in the neighborhood, but why not cash that chip in, take the money, reinvest it in education, and use one of these empty school buildings that you have as your headquarters?
I think many districts around the country have attempted to do that, and many of them have turned around and built new buildings. Mm-hmm. Right now, our situation is we have five floors mm-hmm. In that particular location, and most of the people in there are support staff or teachers on special assignment working on federal grant programs, coaches or what have you. We have looked at the possibility of relocating, and right now it is not feasible for us to do so. It's really more efficient for us to stay where we are, because our schools in this particular time are being used for various programs. If we are not using them, then we're making them available to the state that they can be taken over by charters or what have you. But after looking at the situation, we are more efficient right where we are at the current time. We don't see going out renovating or transforming an empty school as the answer for what we need to do to provide services.
You talked about schools that aren't performing in your plan.
Right.
Being given extra supervision, extra help, doing what needs to be done to turn those schools around.
Right.
You also talked about in your plan those schools that are doing fantastic, kind of loosening up the apron strings, kind of giving them more freedom. Why not, for those particular schools, just simply say, hey, these are our first Indianapolis public school charter schools, which you have the authority to do, you and the board, and out-charter the charters?
Well, quite frankly, Amos, we're going to have three kinds of schools, the mm-hmm. traditional schools, the high-risk, high-need schools, and the semi-autonomous schools. Semi-autonomous schools are somewhat similar to what was happening with the site-based decision-making schools some years ago. When I became superintendent 7 years ago, we were in a state of disarray in the school district because mm-hmm. they had site-based decision-making, which means schools were independent entities, and they had multiple book adoptions, multiple writing adoptions. So with all of our high mobility and kids moving around, they would go from school A, B, or C, and they were in completely three different areas. That hurt them because mm-hmm. they had to get on course with their reading, their writing, et cetera. We needed to be aligned to meet state standards and prepare them for the challenges that come to them with these particular assessments. But the other part of this, 2 years ago when we completed our new strategic plan, we said then that we were trying to develop some semi-autonomous schools that could have some autonomy in human resources of personnel, in their budget, in their purchasing processes, but they would not have semi-autonomy in the curriculum because we have to make sure that all students are getting certain programs in terms of their curriculum. But there's a lot of freedom and opportunity there. What we're finding, Amos, is these people, the Mine Trust and others, haven't talked to the principals, haven't talked to the teachers. We have so much that our principals have to do to be instructional leaders. They don't have time to be personnel directors or to be purchasing agents or to be business officials. If they're doing their job as the instructional leader and supervisor of that particular school, they have more than enough to do. When you assume those other responsibilities, of course, you need a very good school advisory committee, you need a very good school plan. You got to have a lot more help. Now, we have a few schools we know and believe can do that. But many of our schools are not prepared or able to do that at this particular point. But eventually, we would hope at least 50% of our schools could move to that. In terms of charter schools, you know, when you look at the efficiency model of schools, when you have that much variation, you build in inefficiencies. David Harris likes to talk about New Orleans, but nobody wants to go to New Orleans to see that. New Orleans has tremendous problems with parent communication. School maintenance and upkeep is a mess. Transportation is a nightmare.
Well, they admitted to, when I asked them a question, the guy that was here from New Orleans, and I asked about discipline. And
it's a mess
and I asked about they admitted that there was a problem. They admitted that in terms of equity, in terms of how kids are treated, they admitted they had a problem. And I'm going, I almost want to say, well, why are you here?
Yes, and why do you want us to follow that model when already we are ahead of that? It doesn't make sense to me. And I've told David that. Matter of fact, I went to New Orleans on the same plane that David and some other people went to look at that program.
239-1310, 239-1310. You may have questions for Dr. Eugene White. He's superintendent of IPS. One of the other things is, in a district where for the next at least 2 to 3 school years, enrollment is going to be in flux, A, the population of the district is down. The only thing that grew in terms of in the IPS school district in terms of people were Hispanics. And now there's a national story today that perhaps a number of Hispanics are moving back from whence they came, and immigration may be slowing down. In the wake of an unsettled area, and one of the things you did bring up in your report is raising the question, how many public schools, whether they're state chartered, whether they are Ball State chartered, whether they're mayor's chartered, whether there's IPS, how many public schools can this district absorb? Is it a point where that in that environment, why are you IPS even thinking about adding any kind of school, any kind of additional magnets? Why not at this point in the card game hold the hand you got and improve the hand without reaching in and getting more cards?
Well, I think our particular position, Amon, says, first of all, there's a point of diminishing return when you just add schools to be adding schools. Mm-hmm. Our schools are all part of a plan that we have. We're not altering our plan because of some proposal. Our plan is to increase the number of options and opportunities for parents and students. So when we increase magnet schools, or we increase K-8 schools, all of that is a part of expanding those choices and options for parents and students. We don't see, the mayor had said earlier, that they want 20 more charter schools. And my question is, for what and where will you put them? Mm-hmm. Because pretty soon you hit a point of diminishing return where when you add these schools, they take away from everything else, and it's going to be inefficient. But in terms of IPS, Amos, quite frankly, I'm pleased with the progress we've made in terms of retention. You know, for this school year, we only lost 490 students from last year, mm-hmm. in spite of all the hubbub about state takeovers. The year before, we lost 1,000 students. We lost 500 of those from school 79 because it was under renovation. The year prior to that, we only lost about 450 students. So over the last 3 years, we've shown more stability in our numbers. Now, because we're going to lose 4 schools to takeover, of course our numbers are going to suffer at the end of this particular school year. But I think we are operating in our strategic plan, Amos, to have the best school district we can for students with a population between 20,000 and 30,000. And that's our future. And we feel like in that range, we're going to offer the best education options we can.
But you also raised a point. Let's just say, for the sake of the argument, that somebody called you and said, Dr. White, we don't want you to come be our superintendent because you know you ain't, that's over. But we want you to come and advise our town on what to do with our schools. If you were going to any town cold, wouldn't one of the first things you do is analyze the town and see how many schools do we need to do the job? Isn't that what, in your business, you do in terms of starting out?
Well, it depends on the dynamics and politics of the city. I know in Fort Wayne, East Allen County, they had, I remember once upon a time, they had 5,000 kids. They had 5 high schools. Mm-hmm. It was totally inefficient. But if you test them, as a school board member, you would never be reelected. Right. The politics of those situations really dictate what administrators often do, even when they know better. sometimes they ride with that. We've closed 15 schools, Amos, right, in the last 6 years. And why did we do that? Because we were inefficient. We were at a level of 60 or 70% utilization, and we had to be more efficient. So when you go to a place like that, you ask them, what are your greatest concerns? And then from their perception of their greatest concerns, you start there. And then you expand that to things you can identify. But the first thing you want to know is, what do they think are their greatest concerns?
In terms of the growing number of Hispanic students in IPS,
right,
how does that affect student achievement? Because you're getting a number of kids to where you first got to get them to English.
Right.
Then you got to hope you get their parents to some kind of English so you can get the parents involved and engaged.
The fascinating thing with our Hispanic Latino students, Amos, is we have to get them up to speed in kindergarten, first, third grade. But once those students are at really third, fourth, fifth grade, they start to score at or above the rest of students in the district.
Mm-hmm.
They are some of our best students.
Mm.
And when you deal with their parents, they believe in the American dream. They see education as the way out.
Mm-hmm.
And so their mentality is totally different from the mentality of some of our other patrons, because some people are not as conscientious as they should be about getting their kids to understand that you must get an education. Our Hispanic Latino families, when I have a meeting, our parent advisory committee meetings for Latino Hispanic families, we have to have it in a gym, an elementary gym.
Folks turn out.
Yes. When I have it in some neighborhoods, I can have it in a telephone booth.
Mm-hmm.
And Amos, the big thing is just their beliefs in the value of education. These people value education, and they know the only way out is education, so they turn out, even though they can't understand anything I'm saying.
They get the body language.
Yeah, they get the body language. Probably have an interpreter there, but they're there.
Let me go to Sahir at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello, my brother Amos and Dr. Weiss.
How you doing?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I want to ask one question to be sure that I'm asking my second question correctly.
Mm-hmm.
From my understanding, for the 30 years or so of one-way buses from IPS schools to the township schools, that a figure of $4,000 per child left from IPS's budget and went and fed into the township's budget. Am I correct in that assessment?
The amount increased over the years to is more than $6,000 now for those students. Yeah, you would be correct in that.
Okay, so that they were like taking the lifeblood of IPS out from IPS and giving it to the townships, and then you do that for 30 years, that's an astronomical figure. And then they expect IPS to do miracles, though they've taken the lifeblood from IPS. That's one comment, and the other comment, and then I hang up, and this is for the answer, is that I'm glad to see Dr. White and his staff doing more of a marketing tool, because we have people like George Hill, who's playing for the Pacers now, and many other productive people from IPS, my sons as well, that I think it would do wonders to promote them to show what IPS has done and can continue to do.
All right, great question, Superintendent.
I want to thank him for his comments. There's no doubt about that. And I also want to say that, you know, in the history, and Amos, you do a lot of this, but in the history of Indianapolis, there are two great events impacting the school district. One is when they did the interstate coming through here,
mm-hmm,
that broke down neighborhoods. The other thing was the DSEG. Those two things were heavily impacting our school district. And it just is. It happened. And the DSEG was a continuous kind of situation over a number of years. And there's no doubt they transformed the township districts, brought in funds that allowed them to build new schools, add programs, improve their athletics, performing arts program, etc. But still, there was a strong lifeblood possibility in IPS. The fact of the matter is that if we can get parents to continue to be involved in the education of their children, if we can get politicians to see the value of early childhood education, I think we can neutralize all of those compromises that we made over the years, because our students can learn, and they will if they have the proper support.
Let me go to Carolyn at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos and Dr. White. I have a question in regards to your special needs of the children, okay? I have a great nephew who has been in the IPS system ever since he was 3 years old, when they removed him from the First Steps program.
Right.
Okay, he's in the sixth grade now. Since the second week of his school year, he's been having more behavior problems because of he's going through what he's going through.
Right.
And he's at the school that he's at because his last year teacher requested him there. It was never, with him being in the IPS special needs system all these years, they should have better recommendations for myself and my niece as to what school he should attend. He's due to go to the middle school next year. He is not with the mindset to go to a middle school. He's still at a four-year-old level. Okay, putting him in a middle school environment, I don't think is fair to him, and it's fair to the other kids.
Hold on a second. Did you say that at the last case conference?
Yes, we have.
What school is he in?
Let me. Superintendent wants to know, what school is he in?
His teacher quit or did whatever, changed her career, so. He was out actually a regular teacher until like after the first of the year, before he actually got a regular teacher in his classroom.
Well, hold on. What school is he in?
He's at school 103.
Okay.
Okay. Right now, like I said, he's basically only going to school half a day.
Well,
they were supposed to. His teacher was supposed to get back with my niece at the beginning of school after they returned from spring break.
Mm-hmm.
My niece finally called her last week to check on the meeting.
Yeah.
And she was talking about, well, we could try him 3 days a week. What parent who has a work schedule can work with that? You know, he's 3 days a week going back full-time or something like that. When they have severe special needs kids, they already know that he has never been able to sit in a group environment.
Mm-hmm.
We've asked for one-on-one type services. We're not getting it. And with the state laws, the school laws, we can't get them into any residential programs or any other state school programs so he can have the one-on-one environment.
All right, hold on. Carolyn, let me let the superintendent respond, and then hold on. Don't go nowhere.
Well, Carolyn, it sounds like your child has some severe needs, and based on the program you're telling me, I can tell he has severe needs if he's in a half-day program. What you need to know is there's no mandate for him to go to middle school next year. When you have your case conference and you get ready to set up for next year, we have expanded the number of K-8 elementary schools for next year. It's in the plan.
Mm-hmm.
We've added five more of those schools, so there's no doubt we have a K-8 school that he can attend. I would advise you that when you guys have your case conference, request to be in one of those types of programs. So if that doesn't happen, then you need to contact our office, and then we will get your sister in and see what we can do about a different placement. Because I agree with you, sincerely, we only will have two middle schools in the district next year, and they're both Magnet middle schools.
Carolyn, the last case conference you had, were there people from the special ed department of IPS, not people from school 103, but people from downtown?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
I think what
it
you
the lady over the special needs department. I can't think of her name.
Here's the deal. Get the document you signed. You all signed a document, right?
My niece probably signed
Your niece signed it. She has a copy of it. She needs to call that person from downtown and request a meeting ASAP.
We do have one scheduled for the 7th of May.
The 7th of May, all right? And everybody needs to go to the meeting.
We will be.
All right? And not only you and your niece. You got a church home?
Huh?
You have a church home?
Yes, we do.
I would talk to your pastor, see if the pastor or one of the assistant pastors or lay ministers can accompany you. That is your right.
Okay,
and you got to be firm and insistent. I mean, be respectful.
But please be respectful, Carolyn, because we don't want to get
I'm
off.
Oh, no. She's, okay. God is my leader. He's
okay, good.
Me. There we go.
Well, we should be able to take care of your concern at that meeting.
Okay.
Okay, because I know she's called your office several times as well, trying to get assistance for her son.
Okay,
as far as getting his education or what we need to do to get him where he needs to be. We were told that School 51 is what the school that he was supposed to go to at the beginning of the school year has the one-on-one assistant, but that was not really told to us when he was at that time. Only reason he was moved from 51 to 103 was because the teacher that he had last year requested that he be placed back into her classroom.
Okay,
that,
Carolyn,
two weeks later,
they're playing the music here, but let me tell you something.
Wait, hold on, Carolyn.
Carolyn, they're playing the music. We got to go, but let me tell you something. Just bring all of that information to your meeting in May, and we'll take care of what you need.
Okay?
All right,
good luck to you. 239-1310. Got the Superintendent Mel Daniels coming up, Rupert coming up. It's a busy Tuesday after these. Since special education always comes up on this program, Superintendent, and according to the state, 19.6% in the last school year of IPS students were in special education.
22% now.
Yeah, when the Mind Trust talks about the people that are required to be at a case conference in special education are not only people from the school, not only people representing the kid, the family, but there are folks from the central office or the regional offices of special ed. Are those some of those administrators that the Mind Trust talks about?
That's some of them, yeah.
So the Mind Trust will be talking about getting rid of the people representing the school system to make sure that the school is promising things that IPS, as the guarantor of special education under federal law, can do. So if the Mind Trust got rid of all administrators, we'd have special ed that would be worse than some of the problems that I have to deal with on this show.
Well, it couldn't happen. That's the other thing. A lot of the proposal just couldn't happen unless they changed the laws. But I'm glad. I can tell you've dealt with special ed questions before. For Carolyn's situation, it may seem traumatic, but I think we'll be able to deal with her situation. If she doesn't have complete satisfaction after that, she needs to let us know. That shouldn't be a bad situation.
At the meeting last Monday night, I kind of came in late and I was a little bit confused. You know, iRead has been done. The results have gone back out to the school districts. We were live out at Wayne Township the other Friday.
And they gave you the wrong number?
No, the superintendent said 87% and he was included.
It was 75%.
You're trying to tell me Dr. Butts misspoke.
I'm sad he included his waivers in it.
He included his waivers.
Yeah.
Okay. So he was at 75. Yeah, what are you at?
68.
You're without waivers.
Without waivers.
If you add the waivers in, where are you at?
We can be a lot higher. Matter of fact, we're not going to add anything in. What we're doing.
You want to see what everybody else got.
Right. What we're doing is we're working.
First of all, are you pleased at 68? Because to be honest with you, I thought that when I heard 68, I thought that was a very good number for IPS.
It was a very good number when you consider that coming out of kindergarten, for that kindergarten, we get 60% of them on grade level for first grade. Yes, I'm pleased with that. But I'm going to be a lot more pleased in the summer when they take that test again because we're going to be substantially higher than that. So, yeah, we were pleased.
Are you concerned about resistance from parents and students to taking the remediation and taking it? Do they really understand you don't pass that second test, you're stuck in third grade?
Well, Amos, there again, you got people who misinterpret the law. The law does not say it's mandated that you repeat third grade. I'm sure you've read the law. It says we can take that into consideration for retention. We also have to look at some other things. If you've got a very bright child who's, let's say, Hispanic, Latino, learning English for the first time, and he's very bright, but still has problem with English, you don't hold that kid back if he doesn't pass that test. So it gives you a solid rationale for retention, but it's not the automatic retainer. And the good thing about the test, I think, is, you know, before, summer school was kind of an option. If you don't pass that test, you better have yourself in summer school for that remediation, or else you will be retained. There's no doubt about that.
Let me go to Karen at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Ms. and Dr. Eugene White. I have a question. You said that this is a response to Carol's about that one-on-one she needed with her grandnephew or nephew. Mm-hmm. Was an individual improvement plan for kids that they get?
The IEP, Individual Educational Plan.
Now, I have a friend. They told her that they didn't have it. It wasn't in their budget for her child to have one. So she had to take her child out of school, and she's homeschooling him now.
What school is this?
This is Lou Wallace for 34th and High School.
Wait a minute.
That's not true.
She took him out. She's homeschooling him now because they said it wasn't in their budget to do that for her. To get that plan for him.
Oh, no,
do that, and they said it wasn't in their budget. But I want to ask the question, too, is they don't want to give our kids that one-on-one that they need, but yet every school that you go to that have Hispanics in them, they have pulled them out of class, and they give them all that one-on-one. Right. So is that in the budget?
It's in the budget in Title I and some other funds for us to try to get them the assistance they need for their English. However, we also have Title I funds that help students who are behind in English and math. Matter of fact, we have supplemental educational services, SES programs after school that those students can be in. So those things are in the budget.
Is that information available to parents?
It's available for parents. Matter of fact, they get that sent to them to make a decision about which SES program to be in. And going back to your first part of your question, you know, if your child qualifies for special ed, mm-hmm. he or she must have an IEP. Your friend could be talking about she was requesting to get him tested for special ed. But once they're tested and they're in special ed, by federal law, they must have an individual educational program.
No, he's in special ed because that's where he's always been.
Okay,
but
then
school is in Error.
Well, she moved out of Pike Township into.
Oh, this is
well,
that.
Wait a minute. If it's Pike Township.
No, she moved out of.
Okay, now superintendent. No, I'm familiar with this case. This is an individual that was getting special ed in Pike Township.
Right.
She moved across the line.
Okay.
Pike would not allow the kid to remain in Pike,
right.
where he was getting great services. Your
right.
friend, Nate Jones,
right.
wouldn't bend. I don't think bend the rules, would not give a waiver
right.
to keep his kid there.
Right.
The kid goes to IPS. So
right.
Lou Wallace is live over in that corner
right.
off of Gateway in there.
Right.
Yeah.
And they would not allow the services. They were giving her a great runaround and would not. We're only allowing him half day. It was a real convoluted situation. She got, and I kept telling her to go to the state, and the state tried to, I think, was kind of half stepping, intervening, and she ended up having to take the kid out because the kid was not getting any instruction. Period. End of statement, Superintendent.
She said
well,
she's homeschooling him now.
Well, there has to be another part to that story, Amos, because you just can't get that.
No,
because if she went to the state and nothing happened there, that's another part of the story.
I tell you what, Karen, if you would be so kind as to mm-hmm. give Chris, you got the young lady's name and a phone number where she can be reached during the day?
Yeah, but I don't know. I have to call and check with her, see if she wants me to give it.
No, I'm familiar with this case. Because I want to give this information privately right now to the superintendent so his people can follow up with her.
Okay.
I don't believe she would mind.
Okay.
Okay, so hold on, and Chris will take that off the air. That'll allow me to talk to LaToya, 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
Good afternoon, Mr. Brown. Good afternoon, Superintendent. I actually just got out of school myself and caught the tail end of this conversation. Mm-hmm. Just really wanted to call in and just say to Dr. White, you know, I thank you for what you're doing with the Indianapolis public school system. I'm actually a graduate from the public school system, and I oftentimes think that the system in general, it's too much slack, or people have too much bad stuff to say about the public school system, when all that needs to be done is to have parents support it, have parents be willing to pay whatever taxes are needed to help better our public school system. People are doing too much complaining and not want to do anything to solve that problem. I think it is more than just instruction. and just teaching, but it's just all around just help. That means help at home, help with homework, and just all that other great stuff. But I just wanted to say something positive just about the public school system and continue to make it better and do what you're doing with it.
Well, thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Let me go to Councilman Oliver, 239-1310. Hi, Duke.
How you doing, Dr. Brown?
I'm fine.
Dr. White?
How you doing?
Listen, I'm attended a Christian Attic High School. I support the Medical Magnet over there wholeheartedly as a member of the alumni. Dr. White, about the future of the museum, it's been touted that you reportedly want to move the museum out. Is that true?
The fact of that matter is we had a church that we bought next door that we wanted to tear down to increase the parking. The historic preservation people came to us and really was standing in the way of us tearing it down, and they wanted us to give them a year to generate funding to refurbish or restore the church. And they asked, would there be some uses for that particular location? And I said it was next door to the high school, that we can move the museum over to that location if they could get the money for the renovation and what have you. Now, the reason I said that was that we have to bus some of our teams from Attucks to Forest Mountain and other places for them to practice because we only have one gym. The museum occupies the area that is our auxiliary gym. And at the time that we created the museum, it was a middle school, and we could do that. Now that it's a high school, we need that space. And so the reason we wanted to relocate it across the street was so that we could keep up with the museum and also provide for the needs of our students in that school right now.
Well, thank you, Dr. White, for your answer. But the alumni were kept in the dark about what you just said. I was at a meeting last week, and most of us were caught totally by surprise that this was already been vetted out there without the alumni and other interested persons being there at the table to discuss this thing, the upside and the downside to moving the museum out of the school. Mm-hmm. But that's your administrative decision, choice to make, but still we feel that we should have been at least known about it instead of hearing about it through the gossip.
Well, I agree with that. I think we have a meeting, Mr. Oliver, set up Mr. Young is trying to get you, Pat Payne, the person from Historic Preservation, and others together to really sit down and talk about the situation. Well, so hopefully we can get that done.
Well, hopefully we would like to see a final resolve of this thing that is not going any further. Most of us are almost unanimous want the museum to remain where it's at. We feel that it enhances the curriculum of all the students as well as Central Indiana. And moving out of the historic Christian High School would seem to be the downside doing that.
Well, you understand, Mr. Oliver, when we say we're going to move it across the street, we're not going to close it. Matter of fact, they have more room, more capacity to add to the museum, and we still would use it with our fourth graders and others across the state. The other thing that people need to understand, we pay for the museum out of our general fund money, and I have to cut general fund by $50 million, and everything that's not in the classroom associated with the traditional classroom, we have to look at. And over the last few years, I've had to fight even school board members to keep that museum. So when I bring these ideas up, believe me, it's with the best intention of the museum at heart.
Well, we certainly applaud that, but going back to Carter Woodson February month and this and that, the museum being available to the public, being located where it is at, we hopefully we could reverse this thinking. There'll be a meeting called by President Jackson, President Alumni Association. I hope you're able to attend that meeting.
We'll definitely be there.
All right, I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, sir.
Oh, that's another thing in the Mind Trust proposal. They don't say anything about preserving special heritages, whether it is at Shortridge, whether it is at Attucks, or some of the other historical schools in IPS. 239-1310, 239-1310's Afternoon's Neighbors. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our remaining moments with the superintendent. Mel Daniels coming up. Rupert, the governor candidate, coming up on a busy Tuesday. All right, let me go to Terry right quick at 239-1310. Hi there. Terry?
Hello?
Terry, you're on the air. What? Yeah, what's up?
Dr. Brown, Dr. White. Yeah. I was calling in reference to the third grade test, the I Can Read test.
Yeah.
I have a grandson that's in the third grade, and he missed passing the test by 2 points. And I heard Dr. White say that if they were English learners and they were doing well, that you wouldn't retain them into the third grade. Well, I called down to the Department of Education, and that's called a good clause extension. And they gave me three reasons. One is if they were retained in the third grade twice. One is if they were in special ed. And the other one, if they were English learners. Now, my grandson is neither one of these, but he's been on honor roll since he was in the first grade. He did great on his ISTEP, but he only missed his test by 2 points.
You're an IPS, right?
Yeah, IPS. He goes to School 48.
School 48. So let me see if I understand this. So your grandson passed ISTEP last year.
Yes, he did.
Which means he's
He
did it this year. He's in third grade.
All right, so you don't know how he did in ISTEP yet because they haven't finished it yet.
That's true.
They haven't finished taking the ISTEP yet, but the part that he's done, you know, they take it in parts, right?
Right.
Correct? Yeah, but he doesn't know.
He don't know them grades yet. They haven't sent those grades back yet.
Okay.
But let's think positive that he is going to pass ISTEP. Okay.
Yeah.
So first of all,
he's been on the honor roll since first grade.
Okay. Tracy, hold on a second. Terry, I'm sorry. You are aware that he's going to get remedial help, right?
Right.
And you are aware he gets to take the test again, right?
Right. This summer. Exactly.
Right. So if he missed it by 2 points. And the fact he's going to get extra help, and he's already a smart student, and he's great, and he's got a loving grandmother, I have faith that he's not only going to pass the regular ISTEP, he's going to make iRead.
I understand that, but this is what I'm saying. This is, to me, he feels now that he's not such a good student anymore now. Didn't pass this because it was told to him before they even took the test by his teacher that it doesn't matter how smart you are. If you don't pass this test, you will do the third grade again.
Whoa. Hold it. The teacher said that?
The teacher told him that. He came to us with that. So now he feels like he's kind of like nervous about taking the test.
Good point.
But I think that that's a lot on a 9-year-old.
All right, hold on. Hold on. Let me get the superintendent respond. We heard the same thing from Dr. Butts over in Wayne. He was worried about his kids that didn't pass iRead, and they got to take the second part of ISTEP this coming week.
Right.
And motivating that. How concerned are you to hear, first of all, a teacher, probably they meant good in their heart, but a kid now who's lost some confidence?
Well, first of all, I don't know the truth.
I got it.
I do know this, that every day for 30 minutes, every student who did not pass iRead is having remediation. Plus, at the end of the school year, they're going to go to summer remediation. Then they're going to have a test again. There's no doubt that her grandchild will pass. If he was 2 points away with the daily remediation plus summer school, he will pass. And if a teacher communicated that, or if he thought he heard the teacher communicate that to them, I would hope that we get those teachers to let them know that it's just an indicator, but that they still need to pass ISTEP because that's a good argument for promotion.
Mm-hmm.
So if no other reason to motivate him to do well on ISTEP, if he passes ISTEP, it's kind of hard to say he needs to repeat a grade. So encourage him to pass ISTEP because that's a biggie. And then I'm sure he's going to do well when he takes the iRead for the second time.
Damon will be our last call with Superintendent Eugene White. Hi, Damon.
How you doing, Amy?
I'm fine.
I just have a question. I'm someone who has a passion for helping. I think a lot of these kids don't have mentors or nothing like that. Do you guys have, like, where you can set up where someone like myself or other people in the community who want to come in and help and mentor, you know, to come in and give us the resources or give us, you know, certain sites that we can go and help and talk to some of the middle school and high school kids who get lost in the shuffle because, you know, either whatever's going on in their home or in their community starts to become a distraction from them doing what they need to be doing. And people like, you know, myself, who, you know, we've went through the same situations and same scenarios that they might have went through but didn't have the guidance, and just to help them along to keep them focused. Because I know it's a lot of burden on the teachers, and I think it is. It's easy for us as parents and people in the community to point fingers at teachers and at the school system, but it's also our responsibility and our obligation to help our children, too.
Superintendent?
Well, you can call the United Way, and you can volunteer to be a reader and mentor for their read-up program, or you can definitely call the schools for the middle school and high school. They have mentorship programs. The 100 Black Men have a mentorship program. But they won't turn you away if you're willing to share some of your time with the young people in the school. Now, they will check you out, and you must have the kind of record that will allow them to let you work with kids, because everyone who mentors a child got to have a clearance. And so if you pass the clearance, they can have something for you to do.
I appreciate the call. If people go to this IPS website, ips.k12.in.us, they can read a copy of the superintendent's plan, better than the mind trust plan, superintendent says, and to keep IPS moving. Superintendent Dr. Eugene White.